What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a 15-year veteran and three-time champion, subscribe to my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week where we take you through the ins and outs of the association's top storylines, as well as breaking news and so much more. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Chris and Amy show on KMOX and the Bernie Miklas Report, brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling, an American Standard heating and air conditioning dealer. We've got Bernie on Tuesday and Thursday. He's part of the KMOX team again, and he's with us now this morning. How you doing, Bernie?
Everything's great. Good to be with you as always.
Excited about the remainder of Super Bowl week. It rolls on in New Orleans, and we're getting ready for Chiefs-Eagles.
I really am, because I think this is a great game, potentially. I mean, 2 years ago when they played, it was a great game. The Eagles had the Chiefs on the ropes, and the Chiefs, as they want to do, they got off the ropes and came back and won late. But this is a much better Philadelphia team than that one was. And they have Saquon Barkley, which is an upgrade from Miles Sanders. That's the guy the Chiefs had to try to tackle the last time they played Philly in the Super Bowl. The Eagles have the number one pass defense. They get tremendous pressure on the quarterback. They have one of the most respected defensive coordinators in the NFL for quite a long time, in Vic Fangio. And one thing that he does especially well, he makes you work your way down the field. You're not going to get big plays. And then when you get into the red zone, which the Chiefs do a lot, they have a hard time scoring touchdowns. Well, it just so happens that Vic Fangio's defense, you know, just strangles offenses once they get into the red zone. I mean, they don't allow touchdowns that many. They make you kick field goals. My point is, some of the things that the Eagles do really, really, really well are things that the Chiefs may have issues with, because they've had issues with them all season long. And of course, the Saquon Barkley factor is looming large over this game.
What about the head-to-head coach matchup with Nick Sirianni and Andy Reid, when you have two extremely talented teams that that it's going to be this close of a game? Couldn't coaching be a difference maker?
Yeah, and I don't want to take anything away from Nick Sirianni. In fact, you know, I think there's one reason, you know, generally speaking, we underestimate the Philadelphia head coach, because he got that team to the Super Bowl 2 years ago in last season. And to be honest, I can't even remember what triggered all of this. There was all kinds of turmoil. You know, there was problems in the locker room, and there were like divisions everywhere. And Nick Sirianni kind of lost his mind a little bit, and there was real talk about him getting fired. Well, he regrouped and he's done a great job with the Eagles. So that said, Andy Reid is on the short list of the greatest head coaches in the history of the NFL, and he has been virtually unbeatable in the postseason as the Kansas City coach. And one other thing I want to say about Andy Reid, and you know, there was a good story in The Athletic about this. Andy Reid is so good and he's so confident in his team that he saves plays all year just for the Super Bowl. He's got all kinds of secret plays that aren't on film. No one can see them. You can't scout for them. And then all of a sudden he pulls these plays out when he needs them in the Super Bowl. He's done this time after time after time. He even did it in the AFC Championship game, because he had designed runs for Patrick Mahomes, which they didn't do all season. So Andy's not only a great coach, but he's a great planner, and he knows how to sort of keep the other team off balance, because he's got all these surprise plays.
Well, we've been asking people today if they are tired of the Chiefs, and it seems like there is at least national Chiefs fatigue. How do you feel about that idea, and whether or not it is a good thing there's a team like the Chiefs that is dominant in the sport?
I'm not tired of the Chiefs, because this is just a personal thing. I don't tell anybody else what they should think, just as I would prefer they don't try to tell me what I should watch or not watch. But I got into this job. I've said this a million times. I got into sports media because I wanted to see greatness. And in my career, I've been blessed to see some incredibly great things, and great athletes and great teams. and great moments. And I think that when you have a team this dominant and creative and smart, and, you know, they have the greatest quarterback coach combination, you know, other than Belichick and Brady, you know, over the last, I don't know, I'm trying to estimate, they have one of the very best ever coach quarterback combinations. I don't know. This is something that I appreciate. This is something that I savor, because how often in life do you get to see something this great? And knowing that maybe 10, 15 years from now, you know, you say, well, wait a minute, wow, I had a chance to just watch true greatness. And maybe it's the historian in me or whatever. I just have a tremendous, tremendous respect for stuff like this. So, no, I never get sick of it. To me, it's interesting to see how long they can take it forward, and whether anybody can knock them off. And that's the appeal of this game, because I think Philadelphia's got a real chance to knock them off.
Hey, Bernie, also in New Orleans tonight, we will learn who will be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame class of 2025. Torrey Holt, former St. Louis Rams, is on that list of potential players to make it in. Do you think he will?
I do. And I hope I don't have to eat these words next time that we talk. I do, because, you know, I was on that Hall of Fame committee for a long time, nearly 20 years. And I have a lot of friends on that committee, a lot of contacts. And I was reaching out to a lot of them lately, the last week or 10 days or so, because, you know, the vote was actually taken a long time ago. And I'm just saying, like, you know, am I reading the room correctly? I get a sense that this is a really good chance for Torrey Holt. And every one of them said yes, because I think what they're doing is you get these wide receiver log jams in the Hall of Fame balloting. There's way too many really good wide receivers, so they all kind of cancel each other out. If I had to handicap this, I'll say that they'll put Torrey Holt in tonight. They'll choose him over Reggie Wayne, and then Reggie Wayne will, like, be next in line. You know, there's a queue, and you got to just move the queue forward. So I think Torrey Holt's chances, I'll put it to you this way. I think he'll get in, but if he doesn't, if I say that, I'll be wrong, but I'm steadfast in my belief, after talking to a lot of voters off the record, that this is the best chance he's had. Absolutely the best chance he's had.
Bernie, over to baseball. There's been a lot of smoke around Nolan Arenado to the Boston Red Sox potentially, but also looks like a lot of teams like the Sox, Astros, Blue Jays, and Cubs are interested in Alex Bregman. So there might be some waiting on Bregman to sign somewhere. He still says he wants a long-term deal, you know, 6-7 years, something like that, which could be the hangup. What's your read on the Arenado situation to Boston?
Well, you hit it. I mean, it's all about Bregman. And if Boston is getting tired of Scott Boras and Bregman trying to salvage what was a really bad decision to turn down the Astros' offer to him, because I guess he assumed and the agent assumed that there were other teams lining up that were going to give him 6 years and close to $160 million. And that has obviously not been the case. So until Boras decides and his client decides what they want and what's acceptable to them, I mean, I think that this is going to remain at an impasse. But I do think talking to some people in Boston, reaching out to some of my friends in the media, including one of the team broadcasters, I do sense that Boston's getting impatient with this, and they might be more inclined to say, "Ah, what the heck, let's just go get Arenado." So we'll just have to wait and see.
There was also a lot of smoke around Bregman to the Cubs on a 3-year deal, and allegedly they were offering about $100 million, which doesn't seem to be high enough for him. With the way teams have sort of shied away from longer term deals lately, except for, you know, like the Fernando Tatis or Shohei Ohtani kinds of deals, do you think he's going to get it? And if he does not get that, if he has to settle for something, ends up with the Cubs, how much does it change the division?
Well, if he's even with the Cubs for one season, because the way Scott Boras works, if he doesn't get what he wants as far as longevity in the term of the contract, what he'll do is he'll do these shorter deals, but these deals also have opt-outs. It's just what he did with Cody Bellinger. It's like, well, the Cubs will pay him a really great salary for 3 years, but he can opt out after the first year and after the second year. I could very well see something like that going down with Bregman because this is a Scott Boras method. This is something he's done well with. It's like his fallback position. So if you put Bregman with the Cubs are the best team in the division right now. And I say that as one who is always reluctant to overlook the Milwaukee Brewers. But the Cubs have actually had a really good offseason, and this, I think, would make it a great offseason. Not that they're a perfect team. Not that they can hang with the Dodgers if they make the playoffs. I'm not saying any of that. But clearly, in a very weak NL Central, the Cubs are the class of the division, especially if they can get Bregman, which is not a far-fetched idea at this point.
Bernie Miklas is with us now, and there have been a lot of former Cardinals who've been in the transaction news over the last several days. We've got Jack Flaherty, who is back with the Detroit Tigers, and the Tigers still apparently want Bregman. So that's a thing to look at. Harrison Bader with the Twins. Tommy Pham is going to go to Pittsburgh. And Randall Grichuk is, going to re-sign with the Diamondbacks. So, we've been keeping an eye on a lot of these former Cardinals who all have jobs, some of them new jobs.
Yeah, I know that. And the only thing I'd say, if you look at every transaction that's happened this winter or the last couple, three winters, I mean, you could say that about every team in baseball.
Sure.
Former players are signing elsewhere. But we tend, and I'm not, by the way, Ronj, I'm not doing this to take a swipe at you because you're talking about something that Cardinals fans always talk about. In our town, we are utterly obsessed with former Cardinals. Just utterly yes. Obsessed. Even the Cardinals that we all said, get rid of this guy. I'm tired of him. You can do better. Just, oh, thank goodness he's gone. And then as soon as he, like a Flaherty has like one good half season, it's like, oh, see, I told you they should have kept Flaherty. So I just get really, really burned out on it, you know? So, yeah. No, but listen, I'm happy for Pham and he'll help Pittsburgh. I think the Twins signing Bader made a lot of sense. They need a good defensive center fielder. Flaherty's bridges were burned here, and he was the guy that pretty much like set the fire to burn the bridge. So and you're not saying this, I realize that, but the idea, and I've seen some people say this, that he was even a factor to return to the Cardinals is just ridiculous. Never was. And especially if they're in their so-called reset season and they don't have enough room for young starting pitchers in their rotation as is.
So last night, pretty big game for Mizzou basketball. They were the 15th ranked team in the country, played at Tennessee, had a big lead, lost the big lead, but they fall on the road by just a few. What are your thoughts on the Tigers?
They're a heck of a team. And I, you know, the fact they lost the game doesn't change my view of that whatsoever. I mean, they're really, really outstanding. Look, Tennessee's got a good chance to be a number one seed in the NCAA tournament, number two seed for sure in the NCAA tournament. They also have the very best defensive team in college basketball. And that includes shutting down the three pointers, which they did really well last night with Caleb Grill. You know, they were hounding him like the whole length of the court. They just wouldn't let the guy breathe to get open for those threes. And so they kind of squashed Mizzou down the stretch defensively, which I think was a predictable scenario. And actually, Mizzou scored more points against them than just about anybody has this season. So I'm not into moral victories or anything like that. But I actually had this game marked down as a loss. And Mizzou, actually, despite the loss, they're having road success in the SEC. And last night's loss really didn't do anything to deter thoughts that this is a really good basketball team. They just didn't close it out down the stretch. But you got to also factor in the competition and the home court and all that.
Well, Bernie, we have to say goodbye. But I am sure. Learning right now. Within the last few minutes, the news broke that the Bears principal owner, Virginia McCaskey, has died. She's 102. So
God bless her. Seriously. Yeah, wonderful woman.
Yeah.
Just a wonderful woman. George Halas's daughter. I mean, you talk about the family lines going back forever. So she was really, really classy. I had a chance a long time ago to talk to her a little bit. Very, very nice person. So, but she had a wonderful life. She really did.